Hello, and welcome back to the unofficial Shopify podcast, my friends. I'm your host, Kurt Elster.
Jack Nasty.
And today, we are going to talk to an apparel brand. And apparel's big. Fashion and apparel, it's a big vertical and category on Shopify. But our guest today, a Shark Tank alum. Okay, not that many Shark Tank alums out there. There's a finite number. That's always fun. I want to hear about that. But more importantly, someone who has a cause, a mission behind their brand. We know that makes things more successful. A pain or problem in their own life that resulted in the brand starting. That seems to be like the cornerstone of all of these really successful entrepreneurial missions. So I want to hear about that. But also, they chose to try and redefine their category a little bit. That's really tough. But I mean, they've been at this years now. So it seems like they're succeeding. I want to hear how they did it. And at this point, you know, hindsight's 2020, what they learned. And so joining us today is Vicky Pasha from Dapper Boy. Oh my gosh. Vicky, how you doing? Welcome.
Kurt, I am so genuinely stoked to be here on your show. I'm excited. So let's do this and dive right in.
I'm thrilled. All right. Let's start with your brand is Dapper Boy, spelled B-O-I. What is Dapper Boy?
Yeah, so Dapper Boy is an all-gender, size-inclusive apparel line, you know, with a mission to inspire folks to find their confidence through authenticity, you know, in our clothing. It started back in 2015 with my own personal struggle, you know, shopping in the men's department. Actually, I had come out of the closet and chopped off my hair, and I knew I always wanted to shop in the men's department, but I was so afraid, you know, the world was going to judge me for that. So, but I'll never forget trying on my very first pair of men's jeans, at Old Navy in particular. And it was everything I wanted it to be, but those clothes just never fit my body, you know? And so fast forward to 2015 and, you know, we started our line with our very first pair of gender inclusive jeans.
All right. So we'd say all gender inclusive. Do we apply the unisex label here? Or is that different?
Well, it is technically the same. You know, we're just trying to find a way, and it's changed throughout the years here to really welcome all people. You know, and not to dive in too deep quite yet, but I think men in particular, you know, when shopping, I think the words gender, you know, gender in particular is sometimes very triggering for people. You know, I think people categorize us immediately as like that lesbian brand, you know, and get nervous about that. But the thing is like, we're all about body type and style preference, and that is it. You know, we've been embedded with this, you know, thought process that it's men's and women's, and that's it. You walk into a department store, you got two choices, the men's section and the women's section, which are embedded with these societal rules and norms based on your gender. We're trying to break that. Again, this is about style preference and body type. I just so happen to be a lesbian.
Man, I don't even know what I don't know what to do with that.
Right?
Yeah. And I suppose that's the issue you run into. Our people are like, how am I supposed to feel?
Exactly. You know, it's funny though, because it did start, you know, it started with women that looked like myself, you know, and that's what gave me that confidence to start the brand, because there were women like myself that had the same problem. But it turns out after we launched this pair of jeans on Kickstarter back in 2015, it was so much more than people that looked like me. You know, people from all walks of life, trans folks, men with curves, women that hate the chest gap, you know, with button-up shirts, we solve all of these problems. You know, like our jeans, for example, you know, have deep pockets, like women's don't. It shouldn't be revolutionary, you know, to have functional deep pockets. But here we are still, you know, 2024 with the same problems.
The tiny pockets on women's jeans, that does.
Yeah.
That blows my mind. Like, because my pockets, I could like, will stick my hand in and they'll stop about my elbow. It's like I could stick my hand in my pockets and scratch my ankles, pull my socks up. And then, you know, my wife's is like, all right, if I fold that business card in half, I could get that in my front pocket.
Exactly.
Why would you design pockets like that? You guys know how big an iPhone is, right? Like, what are you doing?
Yes. We even added, you know, like there's like that little, it's actually made for pocket watches. There's like a tiny little pocket within your pocket and jeans.
That's what that's supposed to be for?
It was for pocket watches back in, I don't know how long ago now, but yeah, and it just kind of stuck, and it's like, you know, kind of pointless. People call it now the coin pocket, I've heard. But we actually made that the size of a large smartphone. So you could actually put a phone in that tiny pocket and still have your large pocket. You know, when we're thinking through details of all of our clothes, there's always like a functional aspect of it, whether it's comfort, stretch, you know, the pockets. Our button-ups have this hidden snap behind the chest placket, you know, to prevent chest gap that you see in both men's and women's button-up shirts. So, yeah, that's what is kind of unique about us, and also our size range. It's really hard to find a mainstream store with such a large size range. I personally am a plus-size person. If I go to Macy's today, I can't fit in the top size, although, you know, it's still baggy in my shoulders everywhere, but I can only go to my, you know, chest and let it out like it's a style because of my booty. You know, if I go to the men's plus size section, it's like the worst styles on the smallest size and it's down to my knees. So like literally today, there's still no place that fits me like my own brand. Crazy.
Again, it's like you've got this problem. You're like, I got to solve this. And I bet there's other people like me who feel that too. And sure enough, you know, you've been at it for almost 10 years. That means, yeah, there are definitely other people, you know, like you out there who saw, you know, the same pain, problem, and need. Tell me about, you co-founded this with your wife, right?
Yes. Yep. My wife, Charisse, is the co-founder. We started the brand together. It was, again, back in 2015. And I was working in the casino industry, believe it or not, in management during that time. I was the head of the marketing department. And, you know, had this vision for this brand. And we downsized from this, you know, 4-bedroom condo to a 600 square foot beach shack to, you know, make this dream a reality. And Charisse was still working full time, but she was working nights and weekends with the brand for a few years until we were able to grow and you know, her coming on full time. Just wild.
I'm always fascinated when a married couple runs a business together because, you know, at times it could be hard enough to be married, right? It has its own strife and issues. And now add a business into it, add an entrepreneurial venture. And there's just a lot of extra stress that has come along here. How do you balance your roles? How has that experience been for you?
Yeah, it's interesting because we actually talked about, I had the conversation with my wife, Charisse, on our honeymoon. And she always jokes with people that, you know, usually people conceive their first child. Well, we conceived our business, you know, Dapper Boy on this honeymoon. And I think in the beginning for us, it was me mostly running the brand. And so when she came into it full time, you know, I had already established kind of my own position and where we needed an assistance, you know, from her. And she came in. We just luckily work together well. Our relationship started actually in a business, a different business. So we already have had that kind of like, you know, that was our partnership. I don't recommend it for everyone. You know, of course, it can be stressful and, you know, we bring it home. We're talking about it at night, but it happens to work. And we're both Leos, August 4th and 5th, which is like even more feisty in our household for sure. But it happens to work and we work really well together. But I would say date nights are essential and taken for granted for sure. And we've kind of just started talking about this, like, we have to shut the business off sometimes, you know, and just our conversations. We do when it comes to our kids, but then at nighttime when they're in bed, we're back to talking about Dapper Boy and we need to do a better job of like, okay, let's just talk about our relationship and keeping that at the forefront, you know, and that helps. Whenever we have a date night, it's like that rejuvenation of like, this is who we are and now getting back to the business.
I think setting some boundaries around it helps. Like a previous guest said, when they're running it out of their house entirely, it was problematic. Once it was like they had a separate space, that helped. And then they said like the dinner table, it is forbidden to discuss business.
That's a great idea. We should take that on. Good advice. Thank you.
The date time thing is important to just in general in a relationship, just because it's like you are committing to spend quality time with each other. Reflecting back, early on, like what was the big challenge in getting Dapper Boy off the ground 9 years ago?
Yeah, I would say we didn't have a fashion background, you know, so we had to just figure everything out. And it was exactly the way it was supposed to be, even though it was like the hardest of times, you know. But I would say like launching our campaign, like how are we going to find people, you know, beyond friends and family? And so I know for us, and this was during the time, I think I read an article by Tim Ferriss, you know, and successfully launching a Kickstarter brand. And what we had done was we reached out to friends and family first. And we said, hey, everybody, we're going to do this crazy flash mob post. We're launching this brand. We reached out to anybody and everybody that we knew. And they had to agree. I think it was an app at this time. I don't think that app exists anymore. But literally, we wrote the Facebook post along with the picture and everything to go along with it. I think it was a video, actually, at that time. And everybody just opted in to agree. So it was like this huge flash mob post that went out to hundreds of people all at one time. And it worked. And we were off to the races. And I think for us, it was like, we had to figure out not to be shy, you know, about communicating via email, all of those things. And it worked. But I would say like challenges is honestly was like getting our first pair of jeans and having people believe in what we were doing. We were reaching out to manufacturers that, you know, we're saying, do you even know what you're talking about? And they would like hang up on us. Like, and there's minimums and things, you know, at that point, we had no idea about any of these conversations. But luckily, one manufacturer was like, hey, I think you're really onto something. I'd like to hook you up with my pattern maker. And we, you know, just started this sampling process, which took us 6 months, you know, for our very first sample of jeans, because they were just really off. They were either very feminine or very masculine. Like, we were really putting together the best of these two worlds, you know? And so it took quite some time. And plus not having that background and the language at that point, you know, also took quite a bit of time too. But again, like, all of these lessons were so essential because we, you know, are so proud to say that we've built this business completely from the ground up. And we've learned every mistake, you know, in the book, for sure.
So with that initial Kickstarter, I Googled, I found it. 223 backers pledged $26,364 to the project. And in it, like, you could see samples of the jeans. At this time, they're described as premium androgynous jeans. And with our Kickstarter, you used like a service or an app. I've seen this where everyone opts in, and then at a specified time, everybody posts the same thing all at once. And so it gives you a good chance to like make an impact and, you know, maybe look like it's trending.
Yeah, that was so helpful. And really, that's what grabbed people's attention. I think from there, what was very helpful was our video, because it was very, you know, immediately we're like solving a problem. It's very relatable. And I think people just found us approachable and friendly. And we've heard throughout the years here that people just want to be our friends. You just feel like you know us instantly. And that is something we're very proud of too. So it was, you know, I'm a believer, especially coming from a marketing background, that marketing is everything. You know, it's how we relate, it's how we feel, you know, when we see products. And so that was so huge for me. You know, without having any money, that was something that we invested in, was like a great video, pictures, you know, just using these two samples that we had in these two sizes everywhere, trying to get our friends to fit in it. And then we were just constantly posting. It was just like social media are us at that point, posting these wild videos with our friends and people just getting in on board with that, which was awesome. So yeah, to get that many backers, I remember, you know, a significant moment was we raised $10,000 in 10 days. And Charisse and I were so stoked, you know, that we believed that this mission, you know, and what we were doing was real and that we were going places.
And from there, you know, you finish the Kickstarter. What's next? Like, you've got a Shopify store, you get on Shark Tank, but that moment of like, all right, we got the money, now we have to deliver and we got to, and it's addictive. Hey, I want to keep this going. Where do you go from there?
We had to figure it out because we ran out of money quickly. We didn't raise enough money. You know, we raised for the production, but then what? You know, now the jeans were gone and now what were we going to do? How are we going to fund something else? We were like, should we do another Kickstarter campaign? And we didn't really, you know, love the process with the rewards and just adds a level of like complexity and things. So we decided to go to Shopify, launch our own store. And this was almost one full year later of like, should we keep in business or not? You know, and we decided to run that same kind of Kickstarter, you know, pre-order kind of model. And that's how we were going to bootstrap the brand. And actually, the next product we launched, which was the first product on our Shopify store, was our button-up shirt, which was actually being developed the same time we were developing our jeans. So literally, and I remember this, we had one color button-up shirt. We launched it on our Shopify store. We made a video that was instantly relatable, which instantly showed the problem. Like, do you ever have this problem showing that chest gap, you know, right away? and people were just on board. And imagine.
I've heard chess gap.
Say that again.
Is like this thing we got to solve. I said, I've heard chess gap is this thing we got to solve. What? Explain chess gap to me in button-down shirts.
Yeah. So the button-down shirts, there's like in between the buttons, especially in the bust area, it kind of, it stretches there where there's this giant gap and you can see a, you know, full-on peep show going on. So we added these snaps that close the gap. Yes. Yeah, which is like
a game changer, that's what I thought.
For people, for both men and women. Yep. Yep. And so we had launched that campaign on our Shopify store, very first product there. And we did like $30,000 in 3 weeks. So imagine going from like no products, about to go under, had nothing, to $30,000 in 3 weeks. And so what we had
done was you beat your Kickstarter.
Beat the Kickstarter by far, you know, like within a very short time frame. And so we, at that point, we're like, okay, we're onto something here. Let's take, you know, these two products, these button-ups and these jeans, and we were just going to continue launching new colorways, you know, each month. So it's like a monthly kind of thing. And we would just sell out every time. And I think what was happening is, like, we were creating this community that was just so loyal and ready for the next drop because we were just, you know, selling out of products. So we were just launching more and more. But I think the kicker here was that FOMO, because we would only launch, you know, the minimum production was 300. So we were just trying to get to that 300. And so we would say, okay, everybody, you only have 3 weeks. We're going to give you this intro pricing, you know, maybe up to 20 to 30% off. You have 3 weeks to get in. So everyone was just waiting for the next drop because they knew they'd get a great price or we would sell out. And so I think that's, we were just creating that, like teaching them this way, even though they had to wait, you know, 6 to 12 weeks, you know, for their product in an Amazon Prime, you know, delivery kind of world. It's not ideal, but people could not find the fit that we had. And they were just so loyal. So that's how we were able to scale. I mean, I think it was for us 20, by this time it was like, what, when we were fully on here launching monthly by 2017, I think it was 2019, we hit $540,000 in sales. 2020, we hit a million. 2021, 1.2. We were just launching constantly. And we developed this full line. It wasn't just jeans and button-ups. It was t-shirts that fit, you know. And it sounds crazy that a simple t-shirt, you know, would sell so well, but it's one of our top-selling products. Because today, if I were to buy a men's t-shirt, it suctions to all the wrong places on my stomach, you know, the worst spots. And the women's shirts are just too feminine. You know, it's like the scoop necks and the very high sleeves. So again, like swimwear, everything, a full everyday line is what we launched. We were very strategic by our launches too. So we would launch maybe one weekend, it would be a button up. The following would be jeans. The following would be a jacket. So it'd be a complete complimentary look and people wanted to get the entire look.
As we ring in the new year, did you know that over 90% of Shopify merchants won't hit their maximum revenue in 2024? Ugh! That's because they're killing their conversion rates by using outdated landing page designs and default templates. You work hard all year, and you deserve to realize your dream of owning a successful store. But without the right tools, it's like running a marathon with lead weights tied to your feet. That's where Zipify Pages comes in. Zipify Pages is the game-changing landing page builder created by the founder of a $180 million Shopify store. It has everything you need to transform your store into a high-converting, sales-generating machine. Zipify Pages' intuitive builder, mobile-optimized templates, and AI-powered features are helping thousands of Shopify stores boost their conversion rates and run more profitable marketing campaigns. Zipify Pages improves every page on your Shopify store. Just select a template from their template library and then quickly customize it to match your brand. You can easily create better product pages, landing pages, category pages, even home pages. And because every Zipify template is tested on their $180 million Shopify store, you know they actually work. So don't let 2024 drift by with unmet revenue goals. Upgrade your store today with Zipify Pages and make this your best new year yet. Go to zipify.com/Kurt to start a free 14-day trial. That's zipify.com/KURT to try Zipify Pages for free.
I love that you dripped out one item at a time. And then at the end, you're like, oh, you got the full outfit. That's fun.
Yes.
It sounds like you're focused on pre-orders or like this launch strategy. Is that still how it operates today?
It isn't actually. That's not the goal. And so what happened for us was, you know, like so many other businesses, the COVID delays almost wiped us out in 2022. So again, imagine it was just my wife, myself, two part-time employees, and we were doing over $1 million a year. And I just want to call out a quick stat here is that only 1.7% of women-owned businesses hit over $1 million in sales a year. And we were doing that. And I had no idea at that point that, you know, at what point were we ready to or qualify for a conversation with an investor? You know, we didn't know. We thought it would be much more and, you know, all these things, but we were doing these crazy stats here with just this tiny team. You know, so the goal was never to do pre-orders forever. It was really just to test the market, making sure that we were foolproof for when we were going to investors. But then 2022 hit. So 2021, I think like our best month was like $185,000. And then, you know, we were waiting for these productions to come in and the delays started happening. Where 2022, I don't think we launched one single new product because people were backed up in campaigns. The delays took place. We had barely inventory to sell. And so we were just trying to keep the lights on. It was such wild times. We had to lean out as in, you know, any outside contractors that we had during that time, we had to let go of. We raised prices. We had to get real crafty during this time to stay afloat. It was crazy.
Did you, at any point, did you think about giving up? Or were you like, no, I've seen it works. I know it works. This is temporary. I just have to survive.
Yeah, that was exactly it. We knew it was temporary. We even sold our home during this time. Because again, we knew people were just waiting for the products. I mean, every day people were like, you don't have anything. Like, we're, you know, it wasn't because we didn't have good product or a customer base. I mean, our repeat customer is 51%. And so people were just shopping over and over. You know, I think the baseline for Shopify, say, is like 28%. So it wasn't that we didn't have a good product or customers. It was literally the delays. So for us, it was worth it, especially with this mission that we had. You know, we're trying to be the next Levi's of all gender fashion here. Like, this is what we had. We're very plan A all the way people. If we even focus attention on plan B, then we don't really truly believe in plan A. And that's what we always were on the same page with my wife and myself. And so when it came down to it and we were sitting on equity in our home, you know, how could we go to investors and ask for money when, you know, we wouldn't be able to invest in ourselves? So we decided to make that move, you know, which really helped us in the long run. But yeah, it was some scary times for sure. There's many tears and many, you know, mental exercises that we had to do to just, you know, stay with it here. But I wouldn't have it either way at this point.
Well, 100%. I'm glad it worked out. At what point do you end up on Shark Tank?
This was all during 2022. It was the craziest of times. So imagine we're going through the process with Shark Tank, you know, with the producers, which was like 6 months of very like intense conversations. And they knew what we were going through at that point too. But they also saw, you know, our potential, the numbers and things like that. And the producers were actually very nice. And so we were going through it at that time. And in addition to that, we're part of this documentary called Show Her the Money. And they were also filming us during this hard time as well. And so, you know, seeing everything, the conversation about us, you know, selling our home and all of that. So we were, you know, being very vulnerable and it was very hard to do that. And of course, when we see this documentary, we get to relive that every time. But yeah, when we went to Shark Tank, you know, I think they say, and this is where I read, quote me if I'm wrong here, but like 50,000 people applied to that a year. And so we had, you know, I think I had applied the year before they actually reached out. And then we went through that process and it was like 6 months. But I think they dwindle it down to 100 that actually film and 80 go to air. So we weren't even sure if our episode was going to air until 3 weeks before, which was crazy, which is a year ago. And that was April 14th, 2020. Three that we aired.
Well, on Shark Tank, you did not secure a deal?
We did not secure a deal. So it was a crazy experience for sure. And I think that there was just the emotions were so heightened. And I will say, like, when you're coming from a place of desperation, like, nothing good happens. And that day when we went to Shark Tank, we literally were down to our last like $100. We were in the process of selling our home. Like, it was intense. And, you know, we had, that's even a part that's a line on the show. We had said we're down to $100 left in our bank account. And they were like, $100. Oh my God. But really, you know, in reality, we also signed on with our very first lead investor, $250K that morning, you know, and that wasn't seen on the show. Yeah. And, you know, we had talked about that there, and there's, you know, a lot that goes on, you know, on the show itself. But yeah, so we were in a really excited place that morning because we were secured that deal, and we were hoping for Damon, not honestly, just because he's had, you know, boo-boo, you know, and that he would relate to like this niche, you know, category and mission. And he did, and he handed us, you know, his phone number to be a mentor for us, which is awesome. And, you know, we didn't get a deal, but I'm so glad that we didn't, you know, just from the equity side of that, as well as like, we were able to get exposure for a brand like ours to be on mainstream TV, you know, is such a huge deal. And afterwards, what came from that, you know, the messages from people were just incredible. So what a cool experience.
Do you see the Shark Tank bump every time your episode re-airs? You see your traffic go up?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. We see the Shark Tank bump and also the messages of, and one of the stories, this is a really good one here that I'll share is, so it was a woman that reached out. She happens to be a lesbian, and her father and her did not have a relationship because of that. They hadn't really spoken in years, but he was an avid Shark Tank watcher. And she says, you don't understand like what that did for our relationship, that he saw your episode and he messaged me three words, check out Dapper Boy. And so that was such a huge deal for their relationship because he was able to see that on a mainstream TV and relate in that way that it's like, okay, you know, and that was just like the first conversation for them. And like, stories like that we get all the time, you know, and that's why we do what we do. I mean, we're changing people's lives, their confidence, you know, their self-worth, all of those things.
So you've got, it sounds like you've got this really strong connection with your customers, your audience, and ultimately what sounds like has become a community around Dapper Boy. Do you use their feedback in product development?
Yes, always throughout the years. And, you know, our button up, the very first one to where it is today, is completely different due to all of that feedback that we get from our customers. So, no, they're essential, you know, to our brand and have been from the beginning. I mean, we have customers still from our very first Kickstarter campaign, which is the coolest thing. But yeah, I mean, it's again, crazy. Like some of the stories we hear, we even have parents reaching out to us, like thanking us for existing. Another story, and I always share this one because this is what I mean by impact here, is a parent reached out to us thanking us because their 14-year-old child was actually suicidal until they saw a Dapper Boy video ad. You know, like they felt like they belong on this earth. So like, these are the kind of stories where when we're talking about selling our house and we talk about our why, like this is a heavy weight on our shoulders here and we have to, you know, keep going. It's so important for us to go mainstream. We're not trying to be, you know, in the pride section during the month of June at Target. Like this needs to be a mainstream thing so that everyone feels like they belong.
So you see this as influencing societal norms is the end, is one of your long-term goals here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're changing history here. We're breaking down this binary way of thinking, you know, and just being open. And this is also really interesting because we've had conversations with some big mainstream retailers. And the question is like, is mainstream retail ready for a brand like Dapper Boy? And I don't know if we quite are yet. You know, the question is like, where would Dapper Boy go in a store? You know, the men's section, the women's section, you know, is it a third category? And I think this is where we missed the mark on Shark Tank because, and I take accountability for this, is like, we're not trying to create a third category because I think that again, it's too exclusive, you know, like people will feel like that is the, you know, pride section, like kind of feeling like to go there. I think honestly, the best way to do it is baby steps. I think personally, it should be in both sections to start, you know, like maybe, like I said earlier, with men hearing those words like gender and inclusive, you know, that's very rare to hear in men's clothing. So like, what if these maybe it's just jeans we start with in both sections. And the men, you know, try them on and they're like, huh, this fits me like I've never had a pair of jeans fit. And then they start looking into, oh, wait, this is an all gender line. And then it becomes not so scary, you know, and then eventually maybe it could be by style preference, you know, but I think that these conversations are important to be had. And I try to get my face in front of retailers as much as possible so they remember my face when we're ready to have this conversation. But for now, I think, you know, our best route is direct to consumer. We could reach so many more people this way with our paid ad strategies. And, you know, we're working also like on the size charts and how we can, you know, communicate to people how our clothes fit their bodies best.
In fashion and apparel, size guides, size charts, just communicating sizing is such a friction point for both the merchant and the customer. The customer is like, look, I just want to buy something that fits, but I can't try it on. And what happens if it doesn't fit? And then they got to return or exchange it. And the merchant doesn't want to deal with it either. They're like, hey, I wish this worked on the first try. So what are some of the challenges there, or how do you overcome that?
Yeah, it has been challenging, especially with such a hybrid product. And so, you know, we had decided when we were talking about sizing and how we were going to develop this, we actually felt like men's sizing was the easiest to follow. You know, women's sizing, it's very vanity, you know, are you a size zero? I just don't understand that concept, to be honest with you. So I felt like just a simple waist measurement was the easiest. And we offer sizes 26 to 52 currently, which kind of lines up with men's sizing. But, you know, originally we had just size charts, which is not so helpful, you know. And so we've used quite a few different apps on our Shopify store. I think right now it's the Kiwi size chart app that we currently use. So people could technically measure, but it also puts you in, kind of spits out your Dapper Boy size. But at the same time, what we are currently working on, we have a partnership with a company called Couture Technologies, and we are working on our very first virtual reality avatar. And it'll be the very first time that it's not going to be gender-based, where you don't have to pick man or woman. It's literally based on like taking a photo and seeing it on your body. And now you'll be able to see Dapper Boy clothes with a heat map of like where the garment might be tighter, you know, on your body or looser. And so, and building your Dapper Boy wardrobe. So this is all happening right now, and hoping to launch even this year. And we're going to start with phase one in May. So it's very exciting. And I think this is the way of the future. You know, I know there's a lot of different VR, AI, you know, type apps here that we've been talking to for years, but none have done this, you know, completely gender inclusive kind of avatar, which is so exciting.
No, that is cool. What's the name of that app again? Is Couture?
Yeah, it's a company called Couture Technologies.
This episode is brought to you in part by Cleverific. Here's the rub. When customers can't make simple changes to their orders, they get frustrated. It's not just a minor inconvenience. It is a major roadblock in customer satisfaction and retention for you. This frustration doesn't just upset your customers. It bogs down your support team with requests that could have been avoided. And that means slower response times, increased errors, and ultimately, a hit to your brand reputation. But it doesn't have to be this way. Enter Cleverific. This tool allows customers to make changes themselves through a user-friendly customer portal, adjusting, adding, or canceling orders with ease. And the proof is in the numbers. Take Peter Manning, New York, who slashed their support tickets by 99% using Cleverific. These tools are not just about solving problems. They're about transforming your business operations for the better. And for a limited time, Shopify merchants can take advantage of Cleverific's exclusive podcast offer, 50% off their pro plan, now only $49 a month, granting you full access to every Cleverific feature. Visit cleverific.com/unofficial. Use code SHOP50 today to start your free trial and claim your discount. That's cleverific.com/unofficial. Because it's such a new category, there is difficulty in communicating it to potential retailers, difficulty in communicating the sizing, which it sounds like you've overcome that. What marketing is effective for you? Like what, yeah, I assume there it's challenging, but what marketing is effective and like, what do you find has you've been able to resonate and reach your audience?
Yeah, for us, it's been video marketing for sure. It's all content for us. And that's how we were able to get, it was just so shareable in the beginning. I mean, we had in the beginning where we were doing our iPhone shoots, you know, making 90s R&B videos in our button-up shirts. You know, I think people were just like, these guys are just crazy, but also solving a really unique problem. I think for us, we don't have a political agenda. We are just being us in the most confident way. And I think that's the best way to relate to folks that, you know, maybe are nervous to even be their authentic selves. And so for us, it's been content. We're not shy. We're constantly posting things and videos, and we're doing photo shoots all of the time, just in our clothes, being the most confident self. I think email marketing for us has been huge. You know, we do at least 3 emails a week, you know, in addition to our automated flows. And so we are not shy about approaching people, also with texting as well. 3% of our revenue comes from email. Again, we have a very loyal customer base. But we are also, you know, really working on right now, you know, a paid ad strategy that involves all these different customer personas. And so, like, what could that look like for each of these groups? You know, maybe it is from the LGBTQ plus community. Maybe that's one persona. And then there's like plus size men and or women that don't necessarily love shopping, you know, very feminine styles of the women's department. You know, although we are working on a lot of different styles, but, you know, I think for us, it's like communicating and relating to each one of those, thinking through every single touch point for each customer persona has been essential.
How many customer personas do you keep in mind?
Yeah, right now it's 3 to 4, you know, but again, we haven't even touched the iceberg within our own LGBTQ plus community. So we're really honing in on that currently. And then as we're, you know, because we're still in that kind of bootstrap mode, we're fundraising right now. We're trying to close this round here so we can get ahead of inventory. We're launching new styles. And as we're launching new styles, we're keeping up these other, you know, customer personas in mind. And we'll start launching those ad campaigns as well. We've already dabbled a bit and it's working. But again, you have to, when you're budget conscious here and you're in that bootstrap mode, we kind of double down on what works. And then, you know, testing these audiences as we're growing.
So it sounds like you've got long-term goals in mind here for Dapper Boy. What are those long-term goals? You know, new products, markets you want to explore. What's the plan here?
Yeah. So it's a complete lifestyle brand, you know, from, again, button-ups and jeans to swimwear to suits. We have it all. You know, eventually we'll launch different, maybe a kids line. We get that all the time from parents constantly. But again, like our goal is to be the next Levi's of all gender fashion. I see us, Levi's, I say in particular, because they're that long lasting denim brand that everybody knows for years and years and years. And so I think we will be that. Not even I think, I know we will. And so we're striving to be that. You know, we're having conversations with retailers. Also, some corporate interesting things have been coming up here that I can't wait to share in the future. But there's just so many avenues for Dapper Boy, and we want to be at the forefront of that. I think there's a lot of brands out there, especially, you know, over 50% of Gen Z shops outside of their gender. And so I know that now is our time. Yeah. Yep. Over 50%. I think 5 years ago, if we had big investors, I don't even think the world was ready then. But now I truly believe we are. And I think that there's a lot of mainstream brands, you know, saying that they do gender neutral stuff. And I think it's great because it helps us. But at the same time, it's like oversized sweatshirts, which are cool too. But like we really hone in on fit, you know, fit in the size range. Again, it's all about confidence and not necessarily fitting in. It's about belonging and feeling like you could be your authentic self and be completely okay with that.
Yeah, the gender neutral clothing I own is all like, here's a tent. You know, it's spirit jerseys, it's oversized sweatshirts. And, you know, I love that stuff, but it's like, all right, you're doing this on easy mode.
Exactly. So it's like, it's changing that conversation. It's about fit and style.
So what, if you had to go, it's been 9 years since that first Kickstarter.
Yeah.
If you had to do something differently with how you started the business, would there be anything? What would you do differently?
Yes, I would get out of my own way. I would have connected early and often with investors, you know, and having these early conversations, no matter where you are in your journey, because, you know, now we're at this point of like crucial fundraising. And it's like initial conversations about, you know, going back, but we were producing incredible results from the beginning, you know, and it's just, getting out of your own way. When it comes to fundraising in particular, you know, I just learned this lesson even recently is you're not asking for yourself, you know, and when you don't come from a place from money, you know, sometimes it's hard to ask and you feel like it's a personal like favor or something here, but like Dapper Boy is an opportunity. You know, the results we were able to bootstrap is incredible. So I just wish that I connected early and often, not try to figure everything out, you know, myself when it came to that things and just those things and, you know, rely on people and relationships because now it's happening. We're connecting. But if I did this earlier on in the journey, maybe we would be in a different place, you know, even larger.
I like that advice. If you were to give advice to someone starting their own apparel business for the first time, would you tell them the same thing or something different?
Yeah, I would tell them the same thing. I would say, get started. I know that a lot of this is like analysis paralysis kind of stuff here, especially like, like me, I didn't have the background at all. It's crazy that I started a fashion line when I was so frumpy, you know, before with my long hair and shopping in the women's department. If you were to ask my friends back in high school, like, would Vicky start a fashion line? They would laugh, you know, but it's a passion, you know, and it's like the confidence that I developed along the way here. So I would say for people that are just starting, that are like second guessing themselves, it's like one step at a time, one day at a time. Utilize people, connections, go to conferences, get inspired, read books. You're not in this alone and connect with people, you know, follow me on LinkedIn, ask questions. I'm always available because I wish that I had that, you know, back in the day. And I did it because I was too much in my head that I had to figure it out all myself. So it's connecting with folks. You're not alone.
Yeah, that network and like not just adding people on LinkedIn, but, you know, building relationships and being willing to ask, I think helps. And I love that you're like, man, I wish I could have just gotten out of my own way. I often reflect, I think we all have those moments where we're like, oh yeah, I should have just, you know, gotten out of my own way there. But all right, here's the thing I've been wondering about lately. What's the most important skill for an entrepreneur to have? I'll tell you my answer after I hear yours.
There's so many. Skill is in, I think it's like having that grit. You know, that like ready for the roller coaster because it is that, but it's so worth it because, you know, what I'm trying to be, you know, is have this flexible life and for my children someday to be able to have a flexible life as well, you know, and see, you know, what the work ethic that's put in. So I would think the most important thing is, you know, having the grit and patience because it is a long ride here and also like being confident in yourself as in, don't settle or, you know, because somebody else is telling you because maybe they, you know, are an investor or have done it before. Like no one can do it like you, you know, be open to feedback, but don't change your vision.
I like that advice. I think a lot of people pick something similar to that. Mine, I was going to say resilience and a variation of the same thing, right? Resilience because to get it right, you're going to get punched in the face or fail so many times along the way, especially early on. And so, you know, knowing that, accepting it, and just be willing to get up and keep going is so critical. Otherwise, you run into your first issue and you're like, well, it didn't work. I'm done here. Moving on.
Right.
Yeah. You got to commit.
No, I love that. I think mistakes are crucial. Like those mistakes are essential. You know, like when you're going through it sometimes and you're just like, oh my God, what did I do? And you're like hiding under your desk. Now I look back and I'm like, that mistake was meant to be, you know, every mistake was meant to happen. And you don't feel it in that moment, but looking back, it always is.
My 7-year-old was at, we were at an event and there was a thing that she wanted to do, second guess herself, didn't do it. And she went home and she was clearly upset about it. And I said, hey, all you did, like I said, you're disappointed, right? Yeah. I said, okay, that just taught you that the next time that opportunity or something like it comes up, say yes, or you're going to be disappointed later. And that she calmed down, she perked up and I, you know, she's 7. I hope she understood the lesson there, but it worked. So for folks who are interested in checking out Dapper Boy, where can they find your products?
Yeah, so our website's www.dapperboy.com. Again, that's with a B-O-I. also, you know, check out our Instagram, Dapper Boy. And then Sharice and I recently started our own Meet the Pashas Instagram. And it's really showing kind of behind the brand and all the our daily craziness of trying to get this brand mainstream here. So you can follow Meet the Pashas as well.
If we want to connect with you, is that the Instagram? Is that the best way to do it?
Yeah, yep, definitely Meet the Pashas Instagram for sure. Or on LinkedIn, of course, as well, Vicky Pasha.
And all right, any final thoughts or words of wisdom you want to share with us?
Keep going. Wherever you are in your journey, don't give up. If I can do it, anybody can do it. And I think, you know, this life is short here, you know, and it's all about how you make it. So any entrepreneurs that are maybe stuck right now or thinking to get started, just get started one task at a day.
Fantastic advice. Thank you, Vicky. This has been, it's been inspiring. I feel good.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been so much fun being on your show. You're so easy to talk to, Kurt. Thank you.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.